Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. The show is brought to you by EMP 180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. It's EMP180weightloss.com. It's JP, Cakes, Bish, and EB. That is the foursome. You want to get in touch with us? You can call us on the Hadid Carp Clean Listener Lines at 800-636-1067. Same number on the Thompson Creek Windows text machine. Standard message and data charges may apply. And you can tweet us at Junks Radio. Talk to Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for ESPN.com, coming up in 20 minutes as we talk some Tiger Woods. But right now, we'll open up the Junkies Sports page, fill you in on what went down over the weekend, including Tiger Woods at the Valspar.
Well, the sports page is going to be all tournament stuff, fellas. So if you have any questions, any thoughts on the brackets, give us a call, 800-636-1067.
You don't want to lead it with just the Tiger highlight? I mean, it's just for people just getting in their cars. No, maybe they were unaware.
I don't want to piss people off.
Oh,
I don't want to piss the producers off.
The biggest story in sports.
Yeah, well, if he would have won.
It's bigger than the NCAA tournament.
If he would have won the tournament, it would have been, yes.
Yesterday, it was bigger than the selection show leading up to
no,
it.
No,
it really was. If he had won it, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. If he would have won the tournament, it would have been bigger than selections.
Yeah,
but since he didn't, we're going to lead off
disagree,
with the selections.
I disagree, but that I'm just one voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering what ESPN would lead with if Tiger had won.
Well, maybe the tournament, since that's what they had the rights to that stuff, right? Or they made it, didn't
no,
even.
They don't have the rights.
They just went on 10 seconds after. I mean, since they were broadcasting.
For what it's worth, ESPN.com, the lead story is the tournament, the main story. And then actually when you go down the stories on the right-hand side, Tiger's the fifth or sixth. I mean, they've got.
But that's because Tiger didn't win.
That's because he ended up not winning. In the middle of it.
LeBron losing.
In the middle of it, the sports world was on fire with people keeping an eye on Tiger.
Yeah.
Which is so great.
We'll see. Maybe he wins Bay Hill.
He's got
It'll be interesting to see what's number one next week if he wins. Yeah. All right, so any thoughts on the brackets, fellas? You know, any controversies you want to talk about? Do you like the one seeds? Do you like any particular matchups?
You'd have to tell us. You'd
UMBC,
have to lead us.
UMBC, congrats to them for winning the America East. Beat Vermont on Vermont's home floor to get into the tournament. I think it's the first time they've been in the tournament. Pedro can correct me if I'm wrong, but since 08 maybe?
And their prize
and
is they play UVA.
And they hadn't beat Vermont in forever. So they're going to play UVA, the number
but
one
overall
seed.
But you'd be remiss if you didn't mention Jarius Lyles hits
Jarius
the game-winning jumper.
The Matha kid. And he was.
Stud for them.
He was awesome in that game. Right. And Lyles was so good. Easily the best player on the floor.
Pretty sure his dad played in the NFL. Pretty sure.
I think so, yeah. And he was really good in that game. Strong kid, athletic, can penetrate, can jump, can shoot it. I mean, he
do
was
it all, man.
He was really good.
So your one seeds are Virginia, Villanova, Xavier, and Kansas?
Yep. You've got UVA, you've got Villanova, you got Xavier, and you got Kansas.
Was there anybody like that thought they had claim to a one seed that they're better if they're a two, or they don't even get into that?
I don't think so. I mean,
like Duke was fine with
Carolina,
the two seed.
Carolina and Duke obviously both lost in their conference tournaments. I don't think they had any real huge argument. And then you've got who else do you have as the two seeds? You got Purdue. I mean, they haven't played in weeks. And Cincinnati. Yeah, Cincinnati won their conference tournament, won their regular season, and won their conference tournament. So maybe Cincinnati, but I don't think so. I think Xavier always had it locked up.
Where'd Michigan State end up?
Michigan State
they were
ended
three.
Up in a three seed.
Mm.
The thing about Michigan State's so good. I don't really get caught up in, should you've been a two or a three or four, because you're still going to have to play the really good teams. But man, Michigan State is a three seed. That's dangerous because they are really they. You could argue they're as good as any of the one seeds.
The hot fire this year is calling Penn as an upset over number one seed Kansas. That's a lot of
people are calling that.
People are saying this is really could be the year for a 16 over a
that
one.
Sounds like a drab long shot bet in the first round.
Penn leads the NCAA in 3-point percentage defense. And
Kansas likes to shoot.
And Kansas loves shooting the three.
Yeah, but the problem is Penn was so bad for the first half offensively in the Harvard game. I mean, they were really bad. Harvard was up 15 in that game. And then Penn got hot, but...
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like it's a coin flip, but that's just a lot of people are saying that Penn could really give Kansas trouble, and it could be a really exciting finish.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him giving them trouble. I certainly wouldn't pick it.
I'm sorry. I'll side with history and I'll take the
one seeds. Yeah. So as I mentioned, Carolina, Duke, Purdue, and Cincinnati, the two seeds. When you look at the South region, UVA, obviously number one overall. They're going to play in Charlotte against UMBC on, I think that is Friday. And you've got Arizona in that region. You've got Cincinnati in that region. You've got Tennessee in that region. You've got Kentucky in that region. Kentucky's really starting to play well.
Yeah, Kentucky's gotten hot. Don't they have 7 or 8 losses this year? But then they, of course, win the SEC tournament.
They got hot. They've won like 6 of the last 7. They went through a stretch, about a 2-week stretch, where they lost 4 or 5 in a row. And people even questioned if they were going to get in the tournament. But then they put it together. They figured it out. Calipari said, you know, these players were maturing at the right time. And he's got 8 freshmen on this team. He's got 8 freshmen.
We'll have another new 8.
Is he going to lose half of them to the NBA draft?
Probably. Yeah, 3 or 4 of them. But you've got them in the region as well. So you've got Virginia, you've got Cincinnati, you've got Tennessee, you've got Arizona and Kentucky all in the South.
Hey, Jason.
That's brutal.
Nate Silver from ESPN, you know, he's the fat guy. Uh-huh. He says that Virginia and Villanova have about 50% odds to make the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas has a 31% chance as the one seed. And then in the West, he actually has UNC as the favorite at a 25%. Mm-hmm. Xavier only has 18%.
You know who I could also see is Michigan making a run in the West. Because they were obviously hot close of the year.
The question
is, how do the teams play who have had 2 weeks off, essentially? You know, the Purdue's of the world. Michigan hasn't had quite 2 weeks, but...
Right, do they come out rusty or are they rested and refreshed
and good to go? Is a long layoff good for you or bad for you, considering you were playing so well?
Isn't that what Gonzaga deals with every year?
Yeah. And Gonzaga is... What was Gonzaga, 4 seed?
Grabbing? I think I saw
4 in the West.
Yep. 4 in the West, yeah. So there's some interesting matchups. You know, you always, when you're filling out your brackets, you always have to be aware of the 13-4 matchups, the 12-5s. You know, certainly the 11-6s, and you've got to be willing to pick some upsets. Now, in the 13-4 matchups, I don't see Buffalo beating Arizona. Oh, that could be a high-scoring game because Buffalo likes to get up and down.
And Aiden was on fire in the tournament, right?
He was so good. He was so freaking dominant.
Does he just dunk?
Well, he
dunks. Dunk and jump hooks?
Yeah. I mean,
Does he have any shots outside of 5 feet?
Yeah, he can shoot it. He can step out a little bit, but he is just so athletic and big. I mean, he's a monster.
Well, enjoy him in this tournament because the next time you're going to see him play is in the pros.
Right.
Valdez, Marshall, Wichita could be interesting because Marshall can get up and down the floor.
The best game is probably going to be Virginia Tech, Alabama. That'll be the most fun to watch.
It's an 8-9 matchup.
Yes. Both teams will run.
I'll tell you what, the
first to 100.
The Lipscomb-Carolina game will be like an NBA game because they'll just get up and down the floor. Be aware of College of Charleston beating Auburn. Be aware of it because Auburn has not been playing that great, and I could see something happening there. They got to go all the way out to San Diego for that game.
Larrañaga got the Canes in the tournament again.
Yeah, Coach L's
in. His run at Miami's been pretty impressive.
He's a 6 seed, though, in the bracket of death. So it's going to be tough to come out of there.
The problem is now he's marred by this investigation where he's been named. And, you know, to his credit, he's turned over all of his information, his emails. I was reading about it this weekend. And the lawyers are completely flummoxed because the FBI won't tell them what they may or may not have on him. They're just grilling him and implicating him. And he's interviewed with them. He's had all their assistants interview with them. He's turned over all the evidence that he has. But they're still under the umbrella of suspicion. So it just sucks. It sucks, but I'm rooting for him. I guess that's the team I have to root for.
Seems like he gets him to the tournament every year.
The guy's an unbelievable coach.
Has to have been there like 5 or 6 years now, right?
Yeah.
The guy's unbelievable.
He might have missed the first year, but maybe he's been in every other year since he's been in Miami.
He's been there since 2011.
God, it's been that long?
Yep. 2011-2012 season was his first in Miami.
Life is just flying by.
Yeah, he missed his first year. They went to NIT. This is his 7th year.
And he's had 6 NCAA tournament berths?
At Miami?
No, he missed it. No, 2013-14 missed. So he missed first year, missed third year.
So be five out of
you know
seven.
What? Missed the fourth year, too. Went to NIT in the fourth year.
Four out of seven.
Yeah, four out of seven.
Still strong. Still strong. But you're getting into Turge territory now because I think Turge has been there.
Yeah, but that's a football school. I mean, sure. I know in the past I've told my brother who went to University of Miami. Right. I was like, dude, Miami's pretty good. They're in the top 20. He's like, nobody cares about basketball at Miami.
Right.
Coach L, by the way, 631 wins in his career.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
So there were some controversies yesterday with selections. Oklahoma, you know, I don't know how Oklahoma got in. You know, they did beat Kansas. They beat Wichita. But, man, they're a totally different team. They're a bad basketball team now. They're just a bad team. And when teams start to figure them out, you know, mid to late January, they start to beat them pretty regularly. But there was a controversy there with Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State. Valdez, do you have the Vital stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Vital going off after the selections were revealed, specifically on how Oklahoma got in over Oklahoma State.
Somebody explain this to me. I know I'm a dummy. I know I can't spell. I know I can't read. I can't write. I have no math skills. But I want somebody to explain this to me. How in the world can Oklahoma State be sitting home today and Oklahoma in the tournament when Oklahoma loses 11 of their last 15 games? They didn't win one game in the year 2018 on the road. And on top of it, Oklahoma State beats them twice. Not once, twice. Oklahoma State beats Kansas twice. Oklahoma State beats West Virginia at West Virginia. Oklahoma State beats Florida State. I see no logic. They can give me all the talk they want about early, what they did early, 14-2. There is no way in the world that Oklahoma State, if Oklahoma's in, Oklahoma State had to be in the tournament. I think it's a disgrace. I think it's an embarrassment, and it's a humiliation to what this tournament's about. I really, tell you the truth, it frustrates the hell out of me.
Mm. You know, he makes really good points. Not that Oklahoma State's going to win the national championship, but when you compare the two, and I don't understand how the committee does not factor head-to-head in. I just don't understand it. Specifically here, there's only got to be two reasons why they kept Oklahoma or Oklahoma State out of this tournament. Now, they'll never tell you this, but one, either they just want Trae Young in the tournament because people want to watch him play. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to shoot 35-footers. Or two, and they will never tell you this either, that they want to keep Oklahoma State out because of the investigation.
That's what it is.
Now, they can't honestly say Oklahoma is a better basketball team than Oklahoma
right.
State
and,
today.
And Oak State isn't worthy of being in the field because from their accomplishments, they should be in.
You just can't tell me that you really think Oklahoma is better than Oklahoma State.
Yeah. Who's on the committee now? Who runs the committee? Is that Condi Rice? Is she the one?
She's on it, but she's not the chair.
The chairman is the AD at Creighton. His name is Rasmussen. Like Brad Rasmussen or Brett Rasmussen. But you can't honestly, I mean, how do you not factor in head-to-head? Head-to-head is factored in every other sport.
Maybe they need to revisit that.
College football, head-to-head is huge.
Yep.
In the pros, NFL, head-to-head is huge, right? Head-to-head breaks all these tiebreakers.
Yeah, it's nonsensical that it's not part of the equation.
All right, coming up next, we will talk about what went down this weekend with Tiger Woods on the golf course mission. Second at the Valspar with Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for ESPN.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to follow along on TV and join us right now to talk some golf is Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for ESPN.com. Jason, you're not aware of this, but a couple of guys in the show are so into golf and Tiger Woods. It's been Tiger Week every week he's played for the last three or four years. but they're finally getting what they wanted, which is Tiger in contention.
Well, Jason, as you know, as you know, when Tiger plays, I don't care what tournament it is, I don't care how well or how poorly he's playing, everyone pays attention.
And we're going to start paying a lot more attention to Tiger over the next weeks, months, years. I don't know exactly how long this run is going to last, but as I wrote in my column last night on ESPN.com, the next win is inevitable. He is going to win again. I am convinced of that. The old eyeball test shows us that he is back. And for whatever form you've thought back might be, you know, some people think back is just playing again. Some people think back is playing at elite level. Some people think he won't be back until he's actually winning golf tournaments. Well, he is, to all extents, back and will be playing very good golf for a long time if this weekend was any example of that.
Yeah, and we've seen this kind of slow build up here, the slow burn, as he's basically gotten better every week. It's just been remarkable to watch. I fear a little bit, and I agree with you. It's inevitable he's going to win again. He's going to win multiple times. Whether or not that's going to be a major, who knows? The timing has to be right. But he's certainly shown that Tiger, even a diminished Tiger, is better than all these other chumps. And they're the best in the world. It's just incredible what he still has left in the tank. But here's a question I have for you, Jason. How much of this, though, is a mirage because he basically left the club that gives him the most trouble in the bag all week, and that's the driver, right? As soon as we start going to courses again where he really feels like he needs to rely on that, I think that makes him a little more vulnerable.
A little bit, but I think he's going to figure that out. I've been saying that ever since Torrey Pines and Riviera earlier this year where he struggled with the driver. That doesn't bother me as much as yipping his chip shots. It doesn't bother me as much as mm-hmm. not being able to make a putt. The fact that he wasn't hitting his driver straight is not as much of a concern as the fact that I like the fact that he's got a ton of speed on the driver right now. He's hitting it far. The distance is good. The driving accuracy will come around. And I think what we need to remember is that even Tiger at his best, even Tiger of 2000 winning three majors, was not hitting 80% of the fairways. He's never been that guy anyway.
Right.
So just the fact that he's hitting it a long way and he's got some speed with the driver, I think that's really a lot of cause for optimism moving forward. So I that club doesn't bother me as much as it bothers a lot of other people right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but he hadn't won a major in 10 years, and the driver's been his biggest problem the last 10 years. It was a little bit more manageable before that, but nevertheless, he's clearly got the game. He's proven that he can win. Now, he's won at Bay Hill five times. Give us kind of the layout of Bay Hill and how this course...
I think he's won at Bay Hill eight times.
Eight times. How yeah, this course?
I was going to say that.
Yeah,
how this course suits him so well?
Look, it just suits his eye. There are some courses, and Tiger has tried to explain it before. We asked him a few weeks ago, Riviera, why hasn't he won at Riviera? Why doesn't he play better there? And he goes, I don't know. I like it. I feel like I should play well there. I just don't, and I don't have an explanation for it. And of course, he missed the cut again, and he will come to Bay Hill this week, and he will be asked that question. He'll say, I don't know. I like it, and I sort of seem to play it well. So we go into this week with Tiger at 149th in the world, seemingly the favorite at Bay Hill. I mean, it's not the best field of the year so far. There are obviously a handful of really good players who are competing in the field, but I look at Tiger Woods and say he's got as much of a chance, if not better, of winning this golf tournament this week as anybody else in this field. So the fact that it's sort of an intersection of he's in very good form right now and he's going to a course where he has a lot of familiarity and he's found success in the past. And I would expect that intersection to result in a very good finish for him this week.
Talking to Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for ESPN.com. And in your column, you out yourself as a guy who doubted he would ever win again. But you also point out Tiger himself, with his own words, over the last couple years, had a lot of doubt himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're sort of being outed as haters or disrespectful to Tiger, those of us who didn't think he would win again. And my response to that is I was just listening to him. He told us, I can barely get out of bed at times. I can barely walk down the street, let alone go out there and swing a golf club, and certainly not even close to going out there and winning a golf tournament. I mean, we're only 6 months removed. I went back and looked. October 7th is when he posted a video to social media that was captioned smooth iron shots.
Right.
That was the first time we'd seen him publicly hitting a shot in 10 months. And at that point, he spoke not long after that and said, look, I'm just doing whatever my doctors say I can do. I'm just working on some things. I'm just getting started. This could be a long process. 6 months later, we're talking about him being one of the best golfers in the world again. I mean, this is remarkable, the progress that he has made this quickly. So the fact that he's done it all this quickly, I think give it another 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And boy, he really should be at the point where he is once again, whether in ranking or not, just watching him, he should be one of the top golfers once again. I don't know if he's going to be number one. I don't know if he's going to be a top 10 guy. I don't know if he's a guy who just kind of
he's
going to
be top
50
10.
And
he's going to be top 10.
I would think so.
Guaranteed.
I would think so. Now, it's the way the ranking works, too. You've got to understand there's a whole lot of math and formulas and divisors within the world golf ranking. So there's a lot that goes into it, but he's moved up from, I believe, 589th at the beginning of the year, something like that, to 149th right now. So that's a huge jump, and I would expect him to only keep moving forward.
We talk about the intimidation factor with Tiger, certainly over the years. That was constant. And, now the narrative is, hey, these young guys are so good, they're not intimidated by Tiger anymore. But, that was when Tiger wasn't playing very well. He's certainly a different player now than he was, 6 months ago, obviously. And Jordan Spieth played with him twice, and he threw up all over himself. Snedeker shot 78 yesterday, just kind of staying out of the way. I know these young guys are wired a little bit differently than when, Tiger playing against Ernie Els and Mickelson and guys like that growing up. But don't you think that there's got to be, when he's playing well like this, there's got to still be an intimidation factor there? It seems evident.
Part of it is that intimidation factor, although I've never quite bought into the fact that Tiger stands across from a player on the tee box and all of a sudden the player can't swing the club the same way and can't hit the ball the same way. I've never quite bought into that. What is the biggest factor is the fact that there are 10,000, 15,000 people out there watching that singular group. I actually cut across the chipping green, the chipping area, to get out to the fifth hole the other day, and there are a bunch of players out there, and they're all holding wedges, but they weren't hitting shots. They weren't practicing. They were standing there talking to each other, and they were laughing because if you looked out at the course, and you kind of see the whole course, the Copperhead course, at that point, there was like no other fans on the entire course, and all of a sudden you saw one little spot where it looked like there were just a billion people, and some of the players were out there just laughing at the hilarity of it, that there are just so many people out there. Well, that's the biggest factor for other players, that Tiger hits the ball and everyone cheers and they run down the fairway and wait for his next shot. And you're Brant Snedeker and you're trying to focus on your own game and there's people running all over the place and trying to get in position to watch Tiger's next shot. And that's really hard to deal with. And Tiger has dealt with it throughout his career and he's used to it. The other players aren't used to that on a daily basis. And I think that can affect their games.
Jason, is there any concern from Tiger and his camp that it may be too much too soon as far as health concerns go playing in back-to-back events?
He's done it now at least once already. He went from Riviera to the Honda and finished 12th in the second of those back-to-back events. So he has told us that he's going to be very cautious this time. He was not going to push it. He understood sort of the limitations of his body and what he could take. And the fact that he's being cautious and still playing back-to-back events for the second time this year, I think is a very good sign. I think it just means all systems go. And I didn't see any signs of back problems. I heard some people saying, he's moving a little slower, just kind of bending over to pick up his ball for putts. And, he looked like he was hurting a little bit. I didn't see any of that. And I can't imagine that if it was affecting him, first of all, he wouldn't be playing as well. And secondly, wouldn't be playing as much. So I just don't think that's an issue right now.
Yeah, and he wouldn't be able to swing the club at 129 miles an hour, the fastest
on
tour.
How is it possible the guy with a fused vertebrae can swing the club at 130?
More talented than the rest of them.
That's crazy.
It's going to be like a Tommy John surgery where players are going to say, hey, my back is okay right now, but I'm going to go get that fusion surgery because then I can swing 10 miles an hour faster.
Right.
So sick.
Here's what I thought was encouraging, Jason. If you've watched Tiger in his comeback, like some of us have, like studied every movement, these rounds were laborious for him. You could see at the first few weeks, it was not having fun out there. It was like, man, he was trying to get, you know, his kind of feeling back, being in the tournament, all of that. And he was putting himself in these terrible positions, and the guy looked freaking miserable. This week, it looked like vintage time. Like, he looked like he was enjoying the round. He wasn't scared of where the next ball was going to go. He wasn't backing up every birdie with a bogey. It just looked like it's a completely different guy.
It's confidence.
Yeah, he's gaining confidence. He's gaining some momentum. He's getting into a rhythm and some tempo. And I think he understood that this Tiger loves the word process. Mm-hmm. And we always kind of snicker whenever he says, okay, the process, you're working on the process. It really is. That's exactly what this is. And we're seeing the progression right now. It's been a gradual progression. He finished in 23rd at the Farmers Insurance Open, Torrey Pines, in his first start of this year. Missed the cut in his next one. Finished 12th at the Honda, and now second in Tampa. He's making that progression. He's doing exactly what he's told all of us he needs to do, which is continually get better on a weekly basis.
How big is it going to be when he does win again? Like, how big does this rank in terms of comebacks, stories, you know, Michael Jordan coming back and have 50 or whatever? I mean, where does this rank?
I think it's huge. I mean, I've heard people say already that his next win would be the biggest of his career. Tiger was asked that and said, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So he's not offering up an answer yet. I don't see how anything can be bigger than the 1997 Masters victory that had social and cultural ramifications that he just can't have at this point. I thought the 2008 U.S. Open victory, where he's playing on basically a broken leg and a torn ACL, was the stuff of legend. So I'm not sure that coming back from a fourth back surgery to win again necessarily is on the same level, but we'll wait and see what happens. If the next win happens at Augusta National next month, and right, he wins in dramatic fashion for his 80th career PGA Tour win and 15th major, and it's 5 years after his last victory, boy, I might change my tune on that. And it may be, in fact, the greatest win of his career.
Might be. I told Feinstein this. He disagreed. Actually, Eric disagreed too. But I think that this will be the most anticipated Masters in history, especially since Tiger's playing well. Just because I think all
of
those
right now coming off the second,
all of those people
right,
are so intrigued now by the comeback.
Plus, and Phil won. Don't sleep on Phil.
I think this will be the most watched, most anticipated Masters of all time. What do you think?
You know, it's funny. I feel like we say this every single year. Every year we get off to a good start to the season, and some of the better players win. We always say, "Man, this could be the best Masters ever." And you know, we've had a lot of good ones in the past 10 years or so, but it really is different this year. We've got, as you mentioned, Phil Mickelson coming off a victory. Tiger Woods now playing at an elite level once again. And all these other young players. Let's face it, from Justin Thomas to Jordan Spieth to Dustin Johnson, Jon Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler. I mean, I can go on and on and on with all these really, really good players out there right now. And I've been saying this for years, and there's a big if to it, but that if seems to be coming to fruition, and it's if Tiger Woods can play at a high level once again, and you've got all these other young players who have learned how to win, who have learned how to be sort of top players in the world and have reached that level. Golf could be in a golden age for the next, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe more than that, where we've got two generations intersecting right now, playing the best golf of their careers, and going after it week in, week out. I think it's a tremendous, tremendous development for the game of golf.
What gets lost in all this Tiger hype is Paul Casey had 21 putts yesterday, which is just absolutely absurd.
It really is. I can't say enough about Paul Casey. Might be my favorite interview on the PGA Tour. He is
so likable.
He's eloquent. He's humorous. He's thoughtful. He said, first of all, I said at the beginning of the week, if I didn't win, I wanted Tiger Woods to win.
Right.
And then when I showed up for the round on Sunday for the final round, I said, boy, this really fits Tiger really well. I think he's going to win. Hmm. Paul Casey showed up at the golf course yesterday and thought that Tiger Woods was going to win the golf tournament and was kind of hoping that Tiger Woods would win the golf tournament. And instead he won and he was perfectly happy with it. But that just goes to show you sort of the mentality of the other players out there, that they're already keeping an eye on Tiger while they're playing their own games.
Great stuff. Thank you, Jason.
The time. Jason Sobel. You can check out his work at ESPN.com. Thanks,
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, fellas.
Yep. All right.
Remember, Steve Lapis will join us at 9 as we get back into March Madness and the NCAA tournament here on the Junkies.
Just a reminder, you can join 106.7 The Fan as we broadcast live from Tap Sports Bar at MGM National Harbor March 15th and 16th starting at 10 a.m. until 6:30 p.m. See every game of the college basketball tournament from every seat at Tap Sports Bar. Get all of your details at thefandc.com/events. That's just a few days away.
So last night, after put Isabella down to sleep, Jess and I are on the couch just kind of getting ready for Homeland, which is at 9 o'clock. So
yeah,
I'm watching it tonight.
I need no spoilers.
Don't spoil anything.
I won't spoil it. I watched Homeland last night, so we're getting ready for Homeland.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to see what's on. And
love
Salt
Berenson so much.
There's a bunch of NCAA tournament recap shows going on, and I'm kind of just going through the channels, and then I see the OJ confession is on.
Oh, you did
and
watch it?
And to be honest, I didn't want to watch it. My wife wanted to watch it, so I recorded it. I said, you can watch this without me, because I think, look, I lived through the damn thing. I watched the FX show, which I really liked, which
yeah,
I think some
like
of you guys
that.
Didn't think it was that good. That's where Sterling K. Brown
I just refused
first blew
to watch
up.
It. It was cheesy.
He's now won Emmys on This Is Us. He hosts Saturday Night Live, but I think he first blew up from at least the first time I was kind of knew who he was from that People versus OJ.
What's that dog's name?
Isn't it Sterling K. Brown?
I have no idea. I don't know the person you're talking about.
Is that the guy? Did he play?
He played Christopher
Darden. He played Darden, yeah.
On the People versus OJ.
I think he's like the 12th man on the Bucks too.
Right.
Yeah.
This is why this whole confession thing or non-confession, I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
So confusing.
But it doesn't interest me because I know he did it.
Right.
So I don't care.
Everyone knows he did it.
I don't care what he says about it.
No, but it would be interesting if it was him actually giving you details on what happened.
Well,
that would be interesting.
I find, and we'll play the clip here in a second, I find how cavalier he is about
how
it.
How about
to be
he
telling.
Said something? Did he mean this? Because I read this. I didn't see it. That he said during this confession or whatever that Nicole actually ruined his life.
Yes.
You got to be kidding.
He talks about that.
Well,
he
you got to be kidding.
He was murdered.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, so you want to hear that? Murdered. I have that part.
Dude, if I was Nicole's parents or Fred Goldman,
you'd be livid.
There's no way I would not be able to kill him. I mean, right.
You got to hire somebody.
I'm wondering,
I would just do it myself.
Hitman.
Do you think this show will get ratings? Did it get ratings last night?
I think OJ still gets ratings.
Probably
OJ
did.
Get ratings? My wife wanted to watch
needle.
It. Because she was
got a lot of hype.
You know, she wasn't as into it when the case actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was in high school at the time. Yeah. I was in law school. She was nice. And then she watched The People vs. OJ, which was good. I know you never watched it because Ross from Friends played Kardashian
Fate.
Or something.
Was it John Travolta in it?
Yes, he was in it. Where were you when the verdict came in? Where were the junks?
I was at Temple Law School. When the verdict came in and society was, the African American Legal Society, they
cheered. Were happy. Yeah, yeah. What year did the verdict come in? Was it 96?
95 or 96, right?
I thought it was 95.
Maybe it was 95.
Murder was 94, right? I thought it was the summer after that.
I was getting wings at a spot in Crofton.
Right?
I was getting silly wings and fries when the verdict came
I
in.
I was living with my buddy Jay in Heather Hills.
Oh, no, it was 2014. Oh, no. Okay, this is the video, the YouTube video. Right. Go ahead.
I was living in...
I'm trying to figure out. Go ahead.
Is your mind going crazy? I was living in Heather Hills, a section of Bowie.
Right.
With my buddy Jay. I was basically renting a room from him.
Right.
95.
And I was in that room watching a hurting TV that I had. And I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe what I was seeing.
This is when we were doing the cable access show because I used to do the JP on OJ segment.
Yes, correct.
But hey, Eric,
I actually don't remember where I was.
This is what's going to make you lick.
I don't.
You know, it's almost like you were, Ron and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost like they killed me. Who I was attacked and murdered also. In that short period of time.
Yeah, he should go right to hell. Just
and once again, I to this day, it bugs me that it seems that people wanted me to be guilty. That really, really bothered me.
What? Because you were guilty. You maniac.
So let's get to the hypothetical.
Oh, my God. How did Fred Goldman not kill him?
Now, he talks about how hypothetically the murder happened, and he references a friend, Charlie, who I guess is aiding him.
What happened?
But he slips into I.
Hypothetical. Yes. Why don't you tell me what might have happened on the night of June 12th, 1994?
So dumb.
And let's just walk through the night.
First of all, this is very difficult for me to do this. It was very difficult for me because it's hypothetical. I know and I accept the fact that people are going to feel whatever way they're going to feel. In the book, the hypothetical is...
Charlie.
This guy, Charlie, shows up, the guy who I had recently become friends with, and I don't know why you had been by Nicole's house, but it told me you wouldn't believe what's going on over there. And I remember thinking, well, whatever's going on over there has got to stop, right? In the hypothetical, I put on clapping gloves.
Right. Yeah. And you reached under the seat for?
A knife. I always kept a knife in the car for the crazies and stuff because you can't travel with a gun. And I remember Charlie saying, you ain't bringing that. And I didn't, right? But I believe he took it. As things got heated, I just remember Nicole fell and hurt herself. And this guy kind of got into a karate thing. And I said, well, you think you can kick my ass? And I remember I grabbed a knife. I do remember that portion, taking a knife from Charlie. And to be honest, after that, I don't remember. Except I'm standing there and there's all kind of stuff around. And
what kind of stuff?
Butt and stuff around. You know, I hate to say this, but this is hypothetical. I'm sorry.
Right.
I know we got to back up again.
Right. That's okay. I'm going to back up.
Hold on, stop for a second. What did he say? He starts laughing and say, this is hypothetical? Is that
what he says? Yes, he goes, I want to make sure everyone knows this is hypothetical.
Mm-hmm. I don't get it. I don't even understand why he's talking about it.
Money.
It's a very weird setup and
but
scenario.
Why would you even talk about it? You can do interviews and not play the whole hypothetical game.
Because
paid him a ton.
He's a sicko.
Although I don't think he ended up getting the money.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah, I get
narcissist.
That.
Narcissist. Only a narcissist can say that I died and no one's unhappy right. that I died.
Why? It just doesn't interest me. Because I know he did it. Everyone knows he did it. Except for Tommy Horsecamp, our buddy Tommy Horsecamp.
He does still stand
still
by
maintains that he's
still
innocent.
To this day,
probably.
2018.
Probably.
We should call Horsey and get his
We've done
opinion.
That before. But.
No, does he still think it?
Probably.
We did that bit.
It's still funny.
I think for the bit he said he still believed him. But for many years, he believed that OJ was innocent.
I don't think he really did.
He did. For many years, he believed that.
He clung to every theory. Chipping golf balls in the front yard.
Yep.
Is there any chance that Charlie is real?
Well, that he had an accomplice. That he had an accomplice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
I think there's definitely
a isn't that a big mystery that we should try to figure out?
Oh, we're going to investigate it ourselves.
The problem is I don't think there's any evidence.
OJ's investigating it, remember?
But right. I think there probably was some help because somebody had to get rid of all the stuff. Right? Did they ever find the murder weapon?
No.
It was on his bag.
It was
right?
in Kardashian's golf bag.
Right, but the clothes, the murder weapon, none of that stuff was ever found. They did find knives
and
stuff.
They had the bloody sock. I mean, they did
have
some.
There was blood all over his house.
Correct.
I mean, everywhere.
But they didn't find actually what he was wearing. The only thing they found was the glove.
Wasn't there blood in the Bronco?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There was
blood everywhere.
Yeah,
cut pinky. I mean, everything.
He says he cut his hand on a glass when he found out the news when he was in Chicago in the hotel.
Right.
He had Goldman's DNA.
Smelling an OJ trivia game right around the corner.
Mm. We do have Caps tickets to give away later.
We have Caps tickets.
Let's go to Willie in Palm Harbor. Willie, what's up?
Palm Harbor.
Yeah, where is that? Florida?
Hello, I think so. A long time listener, first time caller.
What are you doing in Palm Harbor?
I used to live in D.C. We moved out here to 17. My daughter got a scholarship to play softball out here.
Oh, really? Where? What school?
Southeastern University, Lakeland.
Oh, nice.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I was telling the producer that I Uber here part-time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm going to tell you, the it was crazy. I was picking up people and taking them to the tournament back and forth. And the people were just going crazy. They were, I picked up somebody that actually followed Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. He said there's so many people on the holes that he had to skip holes just to get to the other hole.
Oh, sure.
People.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have to jump ahead.
He showed me a picture of Tiger, and he had taken pictures. It was pretty cool. It was cool.
But you didn't give any silly Uber rides to any of the guys, though, did you?
No, none of the players. However, I picked up some VIP ladies, and you guys are going to kill me for this. I actually got a free ticket, and I didn't go. I didn't get to go. I was working. I had actually a free ticket.
Right.
I didn't go.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
It was pretty awesome, man. It was awesome.
Well, it was crazy because Justin Rose is playing in the final group, you know, because Tiger was playing ahead of him. And Justin Rose is playing the final group with Connors, and there's about 20 people following him.
Yeah, right. I know. Nobody cared.
I mean, the leaders of the tournament, there's 20 people following him.
Yeah. And that's just how it is with
20,000 in front of him with Tiger.
Did that guy, Connors, crumble?
Yeah, he didn't play very well.
It's kind of hard.
It's too much. We kind of, I mean,
he's
too
much pressure. I don't even see where he finished.
Because he was the leader going in?
Yeah, he's a rookie.
But he wasn't the only one. I mean, like, Snedeker shot 78.
No, I get it, but he was the actual leader on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
T-16th. All right. He slid down that leaderboard.
Plus six in the last round.
Yeah,
pressure's
huge. He shot 77. That's ridiculous pressure for a rookie.
Can I go real quick to Marcus? Marcus, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
Hey, Marcus. Great. What's up, man?
Hey, I was listening to y'all talk about the O.J. Simpson stuff. And they kind of remind me, I wanted to know if you all were aware of this case that happened in Memphis with this former NBA player, Lorenzo Wright.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on, sure. Are you kidding? And you think we don't know about the Lorenzo Wright murder?
Yeah, his wife was arrested for the murder.
Right, and the interesting thing about it was, and this kind of reminded me about the whole O.J. Simpson thing, was she wrote not a tell-all book, but a hypothetical book.
Right.
That's supposed to be fictional. Mm-hmm. And it gave them a lot of clues as to basically what she may have done. And that kind of led them to breaking the case.
Well, she hired someone to murder him, correct?
Right. Correct.
Right.
She was
right in
on it, though.
Yeah, but I don't think they could do that with O.J. because he was actually found not guilty. So that's like double jeopardy. So like he could actually say, I did it.
Yeah, he could do whatever he wants now.
He can do whatever he wants regarding that case.
If there was a video that came out that showed him killing them, they couldn't arrest him?
Correct.
I believe that's
true. Terrible law.
I believe that's true.
Need to close that loophole somehow.
Yeah, I believe that's true. I don't think anybody in the country would convict Fred Goldman of murder if he ever had acted.
I certainly wouldn't.
All right, coming up next, we will get back to March Madness, talk about the tournament with Steve Lapis, former Villanova coach here on The Junkie.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.